stop your offenses. So we should understand this, that we have to voluntarily give up our tendency to commit offenses. It means we have to watch ourselves. And when we see we're getting a little offensive, then we have to say no. We have to stop ourselves like that. So then, going down to the bottom of the page, second to last paragraph, he explains what is the effect of this anatta. If you do this, if you commit offenses, what happens to you? So he says that the case of the offender losing the mercy of the name is similar to a subordinate, like a worker or a servant, who's offensive to his vastly wealthy and capable master. He is denied proper care and is treated indifferently by the master. As a result, that person comes to suffer poverty and distresses of all sorts. In other words, you will end up suffering terribly if you commit offenses. You'll end up bewildered, distressed, and anxiety, as they say in the devotee vernacular, fried. You'll be fried to the max. And it'll be too much. And you'll be trying to do something, but it'll be so hard. So, this is the result of offending. But if the offending servant again puts himself at the beck and call of his master, the master gradually shows mercy. So if you just stick at it, of course you should apologize to the devotees for your offenses to them or whatever. Try and make up that, I'm sure you're hearing about from Father Sarah. But otherwise, you should just stick at your chanting, stick at your devotional service, and gradually the Lord will give mercy again, and you'll be able to get into it again. So he says, thus one cannot argue against the gradual elimination of anathas. If you're sincere, even if you make mistakes, even if you commit some offenses, but if you're sincere, then you'll be able to pull through eventually. Anyway, I think we'll call that a day. There is more, but you know, time isn't really there, and it's rather detailed. So, any questions? Comments? Words of wisdom? Do you have to know where you are? The question is, do you have to know where you are? Well, I know you, of course we're in Phoenix. But as far as where you are in devotional service, which I think is what your question relates to, well, it's an extremely good idea. Because at least you know what is forward and what is backward. If you don't know where you are, you may think that something that is way forward is your next step. And you may think that something which is an immediate problem you have is a problem you don't have. So we said at the very beginning, perhaps you weren't here, that it's actually very important to at least have a reasonable idea where you are. Because then you'll know what to do and what not to do in order to systematically advance in a practical way. So yes. The answer is yes. You need to know where you are. Any other questions or comments? So I know you won't have time to read anything. So I won't ask you. But if you want to, you can. As far as I'm concerned. And it'll probably be worthwhile. So you could be ready for the discussion tomorrow. But in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So today we're going on with our discussion of Madhuri Kadamani. We're going on to chapter 4, page 18. The fourth shower of nectar. More and more nectar is showering on us. Very nice. So anyway, yesterday we discussed about Bhajana Kriya, when a person actually begins engaging in devotional service. They actually take up devotional service. This is what Bhajana Kriya means. Now, do I have to write all the nine stages on the board? Are you all sort of tuned in enough bit? Okay. So, Bhajana Kriya, on the level of Bhajana Kriya, which means that the person is basically beginning their devotional activities. They're not experienced at all, but at least they have begun and they're seriously engaging in devotional service. So there are six types of problems, you could say, or six types of obstacles. I won't write them all, but Utsahamai was one, then Ganatarana, Yudha Vikalpa, Vishaya Sangara, then Niyama Akshara, and Taranga Rangani. Yeah. So these are obstacles. But we say they're kind of like childish obstacles. They're really more related, at least, to the earlier stages of devotional service. Although, having said that does not mean that they are completely restricted to just the beginning levels. Even a person who is somewhat more advanced may also get into a buddha-vikalpa, unable to decide what to do, what not to do in a particular situation. And devotees may also accept different vows that they shouldn't really do, feeling that this may help in their devotional service, even when they're more advanced than just that beginning stage. So, it's like that. So that's Bhajana Kriya. One is trying to get established in devotional service, get a firm footing, and not get swept away by any of these things. Then, when one is seriously engaged in devotional service and has a little footing and is actually making a little progress, then one is confronted by, on the next level, anatta nivritti. With, like, deeper problems, you could say. I mean, not that it gets worse. It might sound like we're saying it gets worse. Actually, it's getting better all the time. But it just becomes apparent, these things become more apparent that they exist. So there are four types of anathas, as we discussed yesterday, coming from our previous sin, our previous piety, from offenses, and our mistakes. So from our mistakes, as we're trying to develop, practice devotional service, but we don't always know what to do in some situation. So we may make a wrong decision, but it's not really an offense, but it is something which isn't really the right thing. And it may have certain consequences. So then we also discussed how these are nullified. Particularly, we noticed that the anathas arising from offenses. Now, of course, offenses are anathas, that's one thing. But they have certain effects which are anathas, which are unwanted things. And we read a little bit yesterday how someone who commits offenses, the example was given of a servant of a wealthy master who somehow or other gets on the wrong side of the master and then is neglected by the master. But then as long as the servant carries on very faithfully, eventually the master may accept him again. So, like that, if one commits offenses, then one's position in devotional service and one's taste for devotional activities reduces.
so that one may chant and chant and chant even, but one is finding it a big struggle, like this. So the effects of these anathas, they can linger on for a long time. On the level of Nishtha, of course, there's a fairly significant eradication of anathas due to offenses. Fairly significant. Although it only really becomes more complete on the level of prema and absolute when you directly enter into your eternal relationship with the Lord. Then, sin and piety, they are overcome quite quickly. By the time you get to Nishtha, more or less they're overcome, and they're absolutely overcome on the level of Ruchi. And your mistakes, a similar type of situation, on the level of Nishtha, they're more or less completely removed, and then apparently on the level of Asakti, they're absolutely removed. But at least in the cases of these three, 1, 2, and 4, by the time you get to the level of Nishtha, Nishtha means steadiness, being fixed in devotional service. By the time you get to that stage, the effects of all these things, your tendencies towards, or the effects of these things, is to a very large extent gone. And even the effects, when you get to the level of Nishtha, being fixed, this would indicate that you are not committing any more offenses, at least. Otherwise, if you're committing offenses, that means you're not fixed, because offenses are not part of being fixed, they're the opposite. So, on the level of anatha nivritti, you may still be committing offenses, but of course it'll be lessening, because on the level of anatha nivritti, you're trying to nullify the unwanted things. So even offenses, even though the effects do go on after Nishtha, but still on the level of Nishtha, the effects of your offenses generally will not be so significant. So we're coming to the level of Nishtha right now, at least in our discussion, and hopefully otherwise. But anyway, at least in terms of our discussion. So Nishtha, in other words, is a very good stage. It's a very good stage. It's actually quite an advanced stage. Your mistakes in bhakti are finished. No more mistakes. Because if you make a mistake, that means you're not fixed. Your offenses are finished, and basically any attachments to sin, piety, and the effects of your mistakes are essentially finished. So it's pretty advanced, a good stage to be on. Anyway, so that's a little summary of what we discussed yesterday and leading us into what we're going to discuss today. So let's have a look now on page 18, chapter 4. Now there's a reference at the beginning, unfortunately because of computer problems that didn't print out so clearly, but you'll see a couple of verses there. Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punyashavam Kirtanavijatakstohyabhajani Vidunotisavitsatam. How many of you have heard of this verse, or a little familiar with this verse? One. Okay. So, we won't go into this verse too much, or the next verse. If you are familiar with these verses, then we could go into them, because they're very important verses, actually. So I won't even go so much into what is being discussed about them. But the basic point is that when a devotee comes to the level of Nishtha, steadiness, or rather as the devotee is approaching the level of Nishtha, meaning they're not on the level of Nishtha yet, but they are actually in like the higher levels of anatha nivritti. Then, if you look in the last paragraph, Well, let's look at the second to last paragraph to start off with. He's saying that, referring to these two verses which unfortunately we're not so familiar with, but he's saying that on the level of nishta, only a small portion of anathas remain. Now, it is a fact that even though we've got this level called anatha nivritti, which implies we're nullifying all our anathas, and then you come to nishta, where you're fixed, so the implication is no more anathas. But actually, on the level of nishta, there are still some anathas. That's a fact. That's a fact. Particularly, more than anything, in terms of the results of your offences. Then, let us just, in order to tie this in, turn over to page 19. And you've got that verse there towards the top of the page, then the translation, then the paragraph underneath the translation of the verse. You see that? Here the word cha is used. Here the word cha is used again. You remember Shiva Sya cha? So here is kama loba, loba daya cha. Lust, greed, and what? It doesn't say. But it's understood that there's an and certain things. Anyway, that's a little Sanskrit grammar for us. Sanskrit is a very brief language. So it's not saying and what, but it's, we understand that means and other problems. Lust, anger, greed, and many other things. Anyway, here we say, here the word cha is used in its collective sense, and so on. Thus, on the stage of nishta, the modes of ignorance and passion are no longer present. However, these certain words, atar anavi dam, indicate that some impurities are still present to some slight degree at the stage of nishta, but they're not really obstacles. Therefore, nishta means nishta, that the devotee is steady, even though some anathas are still there. You get the sense? That not that the anathas are gone, therefore steadiness is there. But that steadiness is there, even though some anathas are still present, but they're not present enough to make a big difference. So therefore, generally, a devotee on the level of nishta will not fall down, will never fall down. The devotee on the level of nishta generally will never fall down. Now, of course, there are exceptions. Because, as we know, the effects of your offences may last on to bhava, prema like that even. Can any of you think of an example of one devotee, those of you who have read Shri Gautam, please, one devotee who was well beyond nishta, but he fell down. Maharaj Bharat, in the fifth canto. He was on the level of bhava, or at least the beginning stages of bhava. But he fell down, became attached to a deer. I'm sure you've all at least heard of the story. Became attached to a deer, and then he became a deer in his next life. So he really fell down. And actually he was well beyond nishta, on the level of bhava, which is very advanced. So, why? Actually, the Bhagavatam doesn't really offer an explanation of exactly how it happened. Obviously, something arose from his heart and he got overpowered by it. But exactly how it happened isn't explained in the Bhagavatam. But from this explanation here, we can understand that it must have been the results of some previous offences. Because all the effects of his previous sin, piety, and minor mistakes in devotional service were already absolutely removed, totally non-existent within his heart. Anyway, his example is there, that's a fact. But still, we should know that essentially anyone who's on the level of nishta, what to speak of bhava, it's extremely unlikely they're going to fall down. Actually, the great majority of their impurities and weaknesses, deficiencies, lackings, any things which might cause them to fall down, the great majority of those things are gone. almost completely, but not quite completely. So that means that when a person comes to the level of nishta, advancement is very fast. Up to the level of nishta, when you're going through your utsaha mai, your gana tarala, your vyuda vikalpas, and having struggled through them, coming face to face with the anathas arising from your previous sins and all the rest of it, actually, you may stay there on those levels for many lifetimes. If you're not serious. If you're serious, then you can also go through quickly. But if you're not so serious, if you're not really serious, I mean, you have to be really serious, actually. It's a fact. If you're not really serious, then it's not like there's going to be some automatic process that you're just going to find yourself going higher and higher. There's one verse spoken by, I don't know if it's Lord Chaitanya himself, but it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bahu Janma Kare Yadi Shravana Kirtana. Something, how does it go? Something or other. Tabe Krishna Premadana or something. That Bahu Janma. For many lifetimes, Kare Yadi Shravana Kirtana. You may go on hearing and chanting for many lifetimes. But the idea is that if you do your hearing and chanting offensively, you may not achieve Krishna Prema Dana, the goal of Krishna Prema. Now, the person who has come to the level of nishta has gone beyond those things, basically. So from that point, obstacles, there are no really substantial obstacles, at least. So from the point of nishta, advancement can be very, very fast. So we should all come to the level of nishta. Okay? Right. So let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it today. Let's do it now. Let's not put it off till after lunch. Anyway, so here we are. According to our estimation, if you would like a wild guess, we are all somewhere around Bhajana Kriya and Anatha Nivritti. We are all somewhere around there. That is an approximation. Some of you may be much more advanced. We could expect that would probably be the case. Because I know you're all committed devotees. You all are. You're all committed to Krishna consciousness. But I feel that this is probably likely, that we're all like working through our conditioning, trying to sort it out and get past it. So now here, if you look, now going back to page 18, right at the bottom, the last paragraph, let's see. Oops. So he talks about, you could say there are like five final obstacles. Five final manifestations of anatha that the devotee will be confronted with before actually finally getting to nishta. So they're like the last sort of hang-ups before getting to nishta. And they're listed out there. You can number them 1 to 5. Laya. You see that there? Laya. Vikshetha. And a putty. So mark these 1 to 5 and learn them, or at least make a note of where they are, so when we have our test, you can get the answer right. Kashaya. And what was it? Rasasvara. Rasasvara. So these are like, you could say, refined anathas. We're getting more refined here. These are anathas also, these six under Bhajana Kriya. They're definitely anathas. The ones under Anatha Nivritti, those four, they're more substantial and deeper. And these five here, these are like the last traces of anatha that a person will experience as the person is just sort of about to come to the level of nishta. So now if we turn the page again, back to page 19. In the first paragraph, he gives a little more extensive explanation of what each one is than what you got in the last paragraph of the previous page. So laya, what is laya? Sleep, and not just sleep. I mean, you have to sleep. But laya refers to the tendency to sleep during, first of all, chanting, then hearing, then remembering, and it's interesting, in order of increasing tendency. In other words, you're least likely to fall asleep in the middle of a kirtan.
I would hope you would.
It would appear that's what some people do. But now, when it comes to hearing, like you're all hearing now, if I was just sitting down here and sort of mumbling away to myself, we might all fall asleep. Including me. Now, what to speak of when you're just remembering Krishna, just like a meditation, thinking of some pastime or some philosophy or something like that. So he's saying that there's an increasing tendency, less with kirtan, more with hearing, and more when it's just mental, just remembering. So laya refers to that tendency. That tendency. There was one devotee. Anyway, there's so many stories about devotees falling asleep. I don't know if we should get into it. There was one devotee who was fanning one of our spiritual masters once. And I don't know exactly how it was working, but he was sort of up on a raised level next to him. And he was fanning. And he fell asleep. And he fell right on the back. And went rolling down. Up on the ground. So devotees fall asleep. They're trying to reduce their sleep. Karmis, they sleep for hours and hours. And if they need to, they take a pill to keep them awake if they have to. But devotees don't do things like that. So, yeah. So nishta means that this isn't happening. Anyway, so let's just go through these five. So that was laya. Tendency to fall asleep. So when you're on the level of nishta, seeing this is a last trace of anatta before you get to nishta, the idea is that when you're on the level of nishta, you don't fall asleep. When you're not meant to. You don't. That when there's hearing and chanting about Krishna, then you're naturally attracted because you're fixed and you become absorbed. And even if you are tired, even if you haven't had much sleep the night before or something like that, but you won't fall asleep because that transcendental sound is actually touching the heart and you're on that level, the level of the heart. So your consciousness is really becoming absorbed in that transcendental sound. So that means that if you have a tendency to fall asleep in Srimad Bhagavatam class or when you're reading, one devotee told me that my reading is a series of experiences of waking up. He doesn't even know that he's falling asleep. But when he wakes up, he realizes, oh, I fell asleep. So all these things happen with devotees. But in a sense, it's a sign of advancement. At least they're trying to read. So then vikshepa means that you're engaged in your service. He gives the example that you're chanting japa. But then someone comes along and you get distracted. Someone comes walking in with the latest magazine of a certain type that you have had some interest in, Time magazine or some movie magazine or whatever, something. And you're sitting there chanting, but then you see, oh, there goes the magazine.